Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Cruz intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us that way. Paul Dottino, John Schmoke with you, 1 hour of Giants talk. We'll be joined by Mike Garofolo of Fox Sports at 1210. Update us on the Giants coaching search and on the rest of the coaching searches around the National Football League and how that might affect the New York Football Giants. And Paul, the one name we have not yet discussed yet on this show is the name the Giants announced yesterday that they interviewed, and that is former Falcons head coach Mike Smith, and a pretty intriguing prospect.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his resume, and in the 7 years with the Falcons, he went to had five winning seasons, went to four playoff appearances. There's no question that he's got some pelts on his belt, as they like to say, or at least Parcells used to like to say years ago. Had two 13-win seasons with Atlanta. You can't sneeze at that, worked with a franchise quarterback in Matt Ryan, has a very similar temperament and a lot of similar styles and philosophies to Tom Coughlin. They're best of friends. So, there's a lot to like there. And he comes from the defensive side of the ball. If you remember, he worked with the Ravens and the Jaguars when they had some of their best defensive seasons before he went to Atlanta. So, There's plenty to like about Mike Smith. Of course, he took a year off after being dismissed by the Falcons, and he wrote a book. And I haven't read the book yet, but I promise you, if he gets named here, I will read the book. Because I'm going to want to know a lot about him before I actually get a chance to see him. So if that's the case, but he did write a book about his coaching philosophy, his coaching style, and all the things that he believes in. I've read some excerpts, but I would like to read the entire book if, in fact, he turns out to be the guy.
Everything I understand, he's a very nice guy, a very good man, very much in that Tom Coughlin mold, Paul, as you mentioned. Very quickly, I'll go through his records year by year with the Atlanta Falcons. His overall record with Atlanta was 66-46 in the regular season. Obviously, 20 games over 500 in just seven seasons. Very impressive. The playoffs, the record, not quite as good, just 1-4. He did get all the way to the NFC Championship game against the 49ers back in 2012 and really had an excellent chance of going to the Super Bowl that year, considering how that game ended in the fourth quarter.
Sure.
The loss to the Giants in 2011. 11-5 in his first year with the Falcons in 2008, got to the playoff, lost in the wild card. 2009, 9-7, did not make the postseason, second place in the division. Then 13-3 in 2010, lost to the Packers after having a bye in the divisional round of the playoffs. Went 10-6 in 2011, was a wild card team. That's the year they lost to the Giants. The Giants went to the Super Bowl. And then in 2012, again, I mentioned they went to the NFC Championship game, finished 13-3, first place in the NFC South. And then he finished his career in Atlanta 4-12 in 2013. And in 2014, he went 6-10. And, Paul, when you take a look at why the Falcons took the type of dip that they did, quite frankly, a lot of their issues reflect some of the issues Eli Manning has had here with the Giants. He's still at his quarterback in Matt Ryan, who's obviously doesn't have the accomplishments that Eli Manning has, but a very, very good quarterback.
A franchise quarterback.
Exactly. Have maybe the best wide receiver in football in Julio Jones, who's an excellent football player.
Well, in those days, he had Roddy White, too.
And Roddy White was still there, too. And back in 2013, still a very good wide receiver. He slowed
Primo.
Down a bit since then. But here are the issues they had. They slowed down in terms of the running game. The offensive line struggled, and the biggest strike against the Falcons in those years, the defense really, really, really struggled. And it's been a slow rebuild. You saw they got a little bit better this year on the defensive side of the ball, but they're still working their way back, trying to build that roster around Matt Ryan and Julio Jones.
The other day, I think it was on one of the radio stations here in New York, John Maris said he was interested in somebody who had something to prove. He wanted someone who had a fire, who had a real gumption about him that he was looking to prove something. I won't say chip on his shoulder because I don't think that's the quote that John used, but I think he did say, I want someone who has something to prove. Well, look at Mike Smith. He certainly does. This is a guy who has tasted a great deal of success, but not the ultimate success. And I'm sure, as any head coach will tell you, when things go poorly in a certain situation and they wind up leaving, the one thing that they can't wait to do, especially if they have had some winning seasons, is to get back on that horse and re-energize and resuscitate their success formula. Only this time, not only do they want to win, they want to win the ultimate prize. So I don't think motivation is going to be lacking in Mike Smith at all if he gets another opportunity to be a head coach of a franchise.
No, absolutely not. And I think that's a really important thing to look at. And the other thing that he has that a lot of these other coaching candidates that have been announced don't have is experience. And not just being a head coach, but also being a head coach in the postseason. Being a head coach in the biggest games at the highest level. There's nothing that's going to happen in this job that's going to surprise a guy like Mike Smith.
And I think that, to me, that's the thing that makes him very intriguing to me. Because if you look at the six folks who the Giants have named as official candidates for the job.
Right.
None of them, and this is across the board, this has nothing to do with their abilities or their demeanor or their philosophies. If you strictly line them up and just put alphabet letters on top of each guy's resume, candidate A, candidate B, candidate C, candidate, and you did it that way, and you didn't tell me what their names were, but just looked at their records and their resumes. Mike Smith's resume, he's got more NFL playoff appearances as a head coach than any of the other candidates, in fact, combined. So that's something that you can't dispute. No matter what you think of him, you can't dispute that.
No, I mean, facts are facts. It's simply what he's done. And again, whether or not it's going to translate in the future remains to be seen. The Giants will obviously continue their interviewing process, see who else they bring in, and then make a decision on who they believe will be the best man for this job, Paul. But I think it's pretty interesting that Mike Smith's the one name that kind of really hasn't been mentioned in any other jobs. And it's kind of just been mentioned in the context of the Giants and what I've been able to tell. And I thought that was a little bit interesting.
I had a thought on that.
Go ahead.
And until, if Mike Smith ever has the opportunity to speak to it, I would be very curious as to his response. But my understanding from the people in Atlanta who covered him after he left the Falcons, he did want to take some time off. He did want to re-energize. He did want to take a step back. He wanted to learn from everything that he had gone through with the Falcons. And again, he also wrote that book, which... excuse me, many coaches like to do. They like to write about their philosophies in their book. So my understanding was he was willing to sit back for a year. He wasn't jumping at the first phone call that he got. And I don't know if he got calls. I'm sure he probably did. His resume is too good not to get phone calls.
And from what I understand, he still has been active in the league over the past year.
Yes.
He's been working with the league on some things. He's been watching a lot of tapes. So this isn't a guy, you know, a lot of fans called and asked about people like, you know, John Gruden and Bill Cowher, who have been broadcasting games, but they've
really
been
out
for a long time.
Right.
Mike Smith understands all the personnel in the league. He coached in the conference for a long time. He understands the challenges of coaching in the conference. So this isn't a situation where he's going to have to play a lot of catch-up walking in the door.
I don't think so. Not after just 1 year.
And the other thing I want to bring up, too, and who knows if this is going to be the case or not, but I suppose it is possible, he's a defensive guy.
Yes, he is.
So if the case arises and Ben McAdoo doesn't happen to get an offer elsewhere, and he gets here, ownership can recommend to him, you know what, we think Ben McAdoo is an excellent offensive coordinator, maybe you should consider keeping him. Who knows if that's going to happen, but we'll see. That is a potential situation where you could have the head coach, and then if everything works out, maybe you could have Ben McAdoo as well.
Well, Lance said on the show yesterday, and he's right, to this point, of the six candidates the Giants have talked to, three of them have come from the defensive side of the ball, and three of them have come from the offensive side of the ball. And who knows what will finally happen with not only the head coach but and the staff, but you would think it would be easier. You would think it would be easier for a defensive-minded head coach to consider the offensive coaches who are here in place already. You would think it would be easier for him to do that, no matter who he is.
Then again, some coaches always want to bring in their own people, bring in their own assistants. That might be the case, and who knows. But at least it's open as a potential option moving forward if you decide to bring in a coach that has more of a defensive bent, you know, more open to usually keeping perhaps somebody from the other side of the ball that you might want to recommend.
I joked with Lance the other day, I guess it was yesterday after we were taping our spots, and I said, well, I got a feeling they won't bring in a special teams specialist to head coach the team.
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that, though. Remember, what was John Harbaugh before he got the head coach Baltimore?
And quite frankly, Bill Belichick was a special teams guru with the Giants before he became a defensive coordinator.
And there are some coaches around the league that are special teams coordinators and also assistant head coaches. So it is a situation where you know, that is becoming more and more prominent as
it
you
is.
Go along.
It's happened before. It's happened before. But I haven't heard any special teams gurus coming in here so far.
Well, that is true. Nothing has been announced. And, of course, the one guy that's keeping track of all the head coaching situations around the league and here with the New York Football Giants is Mike Garofalo. Our old friend used to cover the Giants. Now he's with Fox Sports. We welcome Mike in right now to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Mike, you got Schmelk, you got Tino with you. How's everything going today, my man?
That's like the demolition, the old tag team, the WWE.
No face paint, though, Mike. At least not yet.
All right.
Let's break it down real quick first with the Giants. What are you hearing? Obviously, they've announced 6 interviews. What else are you hearing is coming? What's the thought process here? What's the timetable? What are we looking at?
Well, given the fact that there's always a possibility you could have a surprise here, I suppose somebody could come out of left field, and I know I've been asked a ton of questions on Saban. I've got nothing to indicate that that's on the table right now. So I would expect now you're going to be moving into the second phase, depending on whether or not you're getting that interview with Hugh Jackson. And I know a lot of teams look at this schedule the way it lined up with the owners' meetings in Houston happening today and potentially into tomorrow, and said, okay, well, let's get this first wave done, use this time to regroup, and then move forward. And now you're seeing, though, that with the Browns, that Jimmy Haslam is not at those meetings today, according to a couple of reports, which could lead you to believe that they're making a move right now. Now, I know they're strong on Hugh Jackson. So that's why I say, you don't know for sure if the Giants are even going to wind up getting that interview or if that's going to be a continuation of this first phase or if they'll look at that and say, okay, well, we know who our candidates are. Let's regroup and go through them a second time.
Mike, your responsibilities are widespread. You have the whole league to deal with now as opposed to when you were just a Giants beat guy. So if you can, what was the feeling or the reaction around the league when Mike Smith's name kind of came out of the woodwork late in the Giants process? Because everyone else that they had talked to were, quote, hot names that everybody seems to want to talk to. Smith was a little bit of a surprise, I thought.
Yeah, but not a whole lot of surprise around the league from the standpoint of people thinking that the Giants were going to make a move potentially for a defensive coach
right. Who
could come in and keep the offensive staff in place. So that they get the best of both worlds. So I understand what you're saying. You know, he was away for a year. He's really not a real sexy candidate. He just got the results, which were a great number of regular season wins. I know they choked a couple of times in the postseason, but a great number of regular season wins. So people are looking at it and saying, well, here's a guy who can come in with that proven track record that people say, okay, well, this is a guy who knows how to win. Plus, Eli Manning gets his wish to keep the offensive staff intact. And I know, look, it's no great secret because he said it publicly, but I can tell you even privately he's had conversations with ownership saying, hey, all things being equal, if it's possible, whether it's McAdoo as the head coach or McAdoo as the coordinator, to keep this offense going in the same direction, that would be very helpful for me. So we'll see if that's what winds up happening as far as a defensive coach and keep that offensive staff intact.
Mike, what's your sense of the priority in terms of the Giants' search here? Is it very important to have somebody with some head coaching experience? Are they willing to go the coordinator route? And how important is it to ownership and the front office and Jerry Reese to keep Eli Manning in the system when they finally get down to making this final decision?
I think it's important to have that experience. I think if it wasn't important, I mean, obviously every team would love to have a guy who's got experience, whether it was good experience or bad experience to draw upon. If it wasn't that vital, I do think that McAdoo would be a slam dunk. But I think that you've got to look at it and say, oh, we don't know if this guy is particularly ready for this challenge here. It is a big difference between being an OC and being a head coach. And your second part of that question was how important McAdoo and
the
offense was?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think John Mara expressed it pretty well, and I jive with what I'm hearing behind the scenes as far as they'd love to, again, all things equal, but if they have to make a decision where, you know, hey, this coach wants a new offensive staff, or maybe he's an offensive guy and he wants to implement his offense, which would mean a whole new staff, and that's the guy that they're mostly impressed with and they're blown away by and they feel is the best candidate, they won't be shy to make that move. But, you know, they lean a little more toward keeping everything intact, but I don't think they're afraid to blow it up, to be honest with you.
Mike, of the candidate list that the Giants have put out there so far, and we already know that the Gaze took a head coaching job,
right,
and he interviewed here, which of the guys that is still on the Giants list do you believe is more at jeopardy, perhaps, if that's the right word, to take a job with another organization to where if they don't make a move quick enough, they may not have that guy as an option anymore?
Well, they haven't put out Hugh's name, but Hugh is that guy. And what I mentioned last night was, it's kind of surprising that it might be the Cleveland Browns that is able to wrestle away a candidate away from two storied franchises. and the reason is he's going in there with a blank slate in that front office. Sashi Brown is the pseudo GM, basically. He's in charge of the 53-man roster. But whoever the next coach is and whoever next head of personnel is going to have a big say in personnel there. And when I texted that to a front office guy, I said, listen, here's what I'm hearing in Cleveland, versus going to San Francisco where Trent Baalke is the emperor over there. And the Giants, as John Mara said, they do take the coach's input, and Coughlin worked very well, and he had a lot of say in it. But it's not like he was running the personnel department, had a significant input ahead of Jerry Reese. They still allowed those scouts and the personnel guys to do what they do. Point being, that's what makes the Browns' job attractive. One of the other things I reported last night is that Jackson said to them, listen, if I come in, I think it's going to be time for you guys to move on from Johnny Manziel. And my understanding was the Browns were agreeable to that, which is another sign that Manziel's days with the Browns are limited.
Let me ask you about McAdoo for a second, though, Mike, because obviously Philadelphia brought him in for a sit-down. I mean, that's out there. They've admitted to that. I'm not giving out any secrets here. And that was a lengthy interview. I don't know that he's been anywhere else. Is Ben McAdoo a guy who is much sought after, and is he a possible guy who could fall before the Giants make a decision?
My understanding is that he's not a leading candidate in Philly, that it's looking like, you know, Peterson and Coughlin are the top two candidates down there. I would, you know, you start to put the pieces together when you see who a team's interviewing, and you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe the McAdoo interview was, if we hire Coughlin, we can bring him down as offensive coordinator, provided the Giants let him go. Now he's got a year left on his deal, so the Giants could block him for a lateral move. But you start to do the feeling out process, so it's almost like that was part of the Coughlin interview as well. And are we sold as this duo if we can get this duo together? You saw it recently with the 49ers. They interviewed Browns offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, former Giants assistant. He's only been an offensive coordinator for 1 year.
Yeah.
The Browns did okay. He did a number of good things. He's highly thought of around the league, but he's not going to be a head coach this next year. So you did that interview. Okay, well, who are you thinking of maybe pairing him with? Because if he leaves Cleveland, depending on who the next coach is, well, now maybe you can bring him in as your offensive coordinator. They must have a pairing in mind. Maybe it's Coughlin. You know, because, again, he did coach under Coughlin, where you say, okay, this could be our offensive coordinator. I think it's a similar situation in Philly with McAdoo. I don't really believe that he's a leading contender for that gig.
Well, you know, Mike, and we're joined by Mike Garofalo from Fox Sports. And, Mike, I want to go back to that Philly spot. You've mentioned Tom Coughlin in connection to that a couple of times now, which I think is interesting. And, you know, they have Howie Roseman there, who is a big voice in their front office, but not necessarily a personnel football guy. If it does happen, like you say, it's a possibility, Tom lands in Philly, would he have a pretty big hand in the personnel decisions there as well, and would that make it more attractive to him?
You know, I don't really want to guess at that because I'm telling you, it is lockdown central in Philly right now. They have circled the wagons, and not a whole lot's getting out about what they're planning to do as far as that kind of stuff. And again, I do have a sense that Coughlin is a legitimate leading candidate down there along with Peterson. So it's not like a complete vault. you've got Tom Donahoe in that role right now, but that's only an interim role. Even though they didn't say interim, they do plan to hire somebody else to be the head of personnel. The other thing is they haven't really defined Howie Roseman's role right now. I mean, we got a brief after that press conference. We walked outside. We got Jeff Lurie for like two questions as he was walking away, and he didn't really define, you know, where does Howie Roseman's role end and where does the head of personnel begin. But I would think, given Coughlin's resume, given the point in his career, and the fact that he would want to win extremely quickly, even if he doesn't have, quote, say or a role, he will have significant input in personnel, I would believe.
Mike, final question for me. Of the teams that are still in the playoffs, which of those assistants, and I know Sean McDermott of the Panthers has gotten a lot of ink, which of those assistants do you think is most likely to get a head coaching job? And quite honestly, do you think that one of those assistants may wind up still getting an interview with the Giants?
And quite frankly, Mike, which teams are going to be willing to wait for one of those guys, which might be 2 or 3 weeks before they come available?
Well, I'll give you one, and unless it's broken while I've been on the phone with you, I haven't seen it. But Jim Caldwell in Detroit is anything but safe. And the guy up there, the new GM up there, is a former Patriots personnel guy. So while Josh McDaniels hasn't gotten a ton of interest around the league, even Matt Patricia has got a little bit of interest. But while Josh McDaniels, and I'm surprised. I thought McDaniels was really going to get some significant consideration. I am shocked that, as far as we know, hasn't gone on an interview yet. But that would be a situation where suddenly he would be in play. I would watch that Detroit situation very, very closely. And then the other one is, and I don't know what Tom – I said this. With Coughlin's interview with Philly, I think he was interviewing them as much as they were interviewing him. So if he came away from that meeting and didn't have a great feel about things, I could see him necessarily pulling out of there. Then they wind up with Peterson. And then there's one more assistant that I was thinking of, and I blanked already. I can't even remember who it was. But
McDermott?
Some other guy is in the – who?
McDermott?
McDermott, yes. He is a strong candidate down in Tampa Bay. So – you know, all three of these, I can connect the dots and put them in a certain place. But it's not like Doug Peterson's going anywhere but Philly. It's not like Josh McDaniels or Patricia going anywhere except Detroit. Well, potentially Cleveland, depending on how that plays out. The point being that they're all equally likely, depending on how this falls. Everything's kind of interconnected right now. It's an interesting part of the coaching search.
Yeah, Mike, and I think that's where I want to go with my final two quick questions. Is there going to be a situation here where one team's going to hire a guy, and then you're going to see those dominoes start to fall, and you're going to have a rapid fire where the four jobs are filled in a matter of 3 days? Or is this going to get, you think, stretched out a little bit as guys are still playing in the postseason and teams are waiting for them?
No, I think coming off this meeting today and tomorrow in Houston, I think you could start to see, you know, the bing, bang, boom, and the dominoes start to fall for sure. And I'm not sold that it's not – the first one doesn't fall today with the Browns and with Hugh Jackson. I believe that they are going to make a strong push, maybe try and wrap it up today and maybe catch while everybody else is down at Houston, maybe try and drive the final nail into that one and get Jackson to come to Cleveland. So I do think it'll start to fall relatively quickly. And also, you know, look, it's going to depend on which team is win or lose this weekend, because like I said, those other guys have a possibility on some situations. We'll have some more answers in the coming days, I'll tell you that.
Mike, final question for me, and this is more of a football question. What's the sense around the league? Giants general manager Jerry Reese said to the media when he spoke last week that he thinks he can turn this Giants roster and team around pretty quickly and get them back into the postseason and be contenders in the NFC East for a Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Considering their cap situation, which appears to be pretty favorable, what's the sense around the league for how quickly the Giants can turn this team back into a team that's going to be playing games into the middle of January?
Well, it's really hard to go out there and find a pass rusher. That's the kind of thing that can turn your defense around really quickly. And I don't know that, you know, Von Miller's contract is up, but come on now, he's not leaving, whether it's the franchise tag or whatever. So that's how you turn a defense really quickly. So nobody gets the sense that that's going to happen. There are some interior guys who are going to be available. I just don't think that you're going to see a team go from 32nd-ranked defense to the 5th-ranked defense, let's say. I think that's going to be a tough one there. So I think it's a multi-year build, and people around the league do believe that as well. But if you start to see progress, you win some games next year, that'll certainly allow for Jerry Reese to continue in this role and continue to try rebuilding this defense.
Mike, we'll catch up to you down the road. We'll see you at the Combine. Always good to talk to you, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike.
You got it, boys.
Thanks, Mike. That's Mike Garofalo, Fox Sports. Gave us a couple, extra couple minutes there. We appreciate it. Some good information, Paul. And I'm with Mike. I think you're going to see a domino fall today or tomorrow, and then you're going to see the other teams being like, oh, boy, we better make sure we get a guy before somebody else does. Bing, bang, boom, bing, bang, boom. And we're going to know who most of the coaches are going to be by the end of the week.
And then just to put all this in perspective for some folks who may not be totally up on what's going on with the NFL owners' meetings are in Houston.
Right.
They start today, officially.
Oh, you know what? I was going to ask you about the relocation to L.A. I forgot. Oh, well.
That's all right. It's today and it's tomorrow. 2 days worth of meetings. And the primary, I'm sure there are other things they'll talk about, but the primary objective is to sort out what's going on with the three teams, the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Rams, and the possible relocation to Los Angeles, which, you know, just to finish along those lines of thinking, is they're saying there might even be two teams that could go to Los Angeles. It might be a share. It might, like here with the Giants.
Well,
and the Jets.
I mean, I think that's been the assumption that you'd have two teams. I mean, the proposal that the Chargers and the Raiders gave was together. And if you read Judy Batista's article, which is a very good one on NFL.com, I think earlier this morning,
okay,
it's a really good story. If anybody's interested in it, you should go check it out. It kind of gives the different scenarios. You know, the Rams have their own proposal in Englewood,
right,
and then the Chargers and Raiders proposal was to build a stadium together in Carson City. And those are the two distinct proposals. Cranky's proposal, that's the one from St. Louis,
yes,
for the Rams, seems to have the most behind it in terms of infrastructure around the stadium, things like that. The other one, though, you have two teams in one building. They have Iger, the old CEO of Disney, mm-hmm, behind that, trying to build something around it. So that is a lot of cachet. Obviously, Spanos has been a good owner for a long time.
Oh,
so
yeah,
when you have an owner that's been in the league for a while and has been very supportive of the league will tend to be supportive of that owner. So there's a lot of interesting dynamics. Jerry Jones is apparently going to suggest some type of combination of the Chargers going to Englewood with the Rams and them splitting that stadium, but the Chargers have said they're not interested in that proposal. So there's a bunch of factions going on here, and this is like the ultimate horse trading maneuver here. But the feeling seems to be, and I thought this was an interesting part of the article, that whatever team doesn't get to move, the league will help them build and fund the stadium in their former location so that they'll get taken care of.
You mean their current location?
In their current location, yes.
Oh, wow.
When they don't move.
Because I did see where Commissioner Goodell said, I guess it was yesterday, that all of the proposals in those three locations now
were unacceptable.
Were just not going to work for him.
Which is surprising because I thought the St. Louis proposal actually wasn't bad. I haven't seen it. And I think they're going to do a referendum in San Diego in the fall, and they're going to vote to see if they want to fund it
with the city.
But that's too little too late.
That's what they were saying, yeah.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Personally speaking, I thought St. Louis, the dome in St. Louis wasn't bad. We've been around to all of
them. From my perspective, working in it, I didn't have an issue with it.
No, I didn't either.
The Rams did play in L.A. before, though, so that is their old home. I get that.
And there are business decisions that, you know, as people who just stop in for a game don't understand, and that's fine.
Right.
But I will just say to you, of those three locations that we're talking about, well, I've never been to Oakland.
I've never been to Oakland either. I've heard it is the worst of the worst, but I have not been there.
I've been to San Diego. That's not a very pleasant stadium to watch a football game in or to work in. But certainly,
San Diego is nice, though.
San Diego is very nice.
But the stadium,
yeah, so is the downtown area. Well, I mean, is it Petco Field where the Padres play?
Yeah, here's the bottom line. If you have a stadium in San Diego and the league won't give you a Super Bowl, that probably tells you that your facilities aren't quite up to snuff.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Well, the league has said they're not going to give San Diego another Super Bowl. Yeah. So, trust me, you don't think people want to spend the week in San Diego for the Super Bowl? Come on.
In February?
Yeah. You think? All right, here we go, guys. 201-939-4513. Thanks for being patient. Hopefully we got you some good info from Mike Garofalo. Fans, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's go to the phones. Jason in New Jersey is up first, and he's leading us off. Jason, what's going on?
Hey, yeah, just reading the Coughlin news. I'm just really hoping and praying that that Philly signs Coughlin. I don't think he would be he would be a success there. I actually think he would be a total failure in Philly.
Why is that, Jason?
I think that Coughlin makes terrible personnel decisions, and since 2009, he is 55 and 57 as a head coach. That's a seven-year sample.
Well, here's the trick, though. Tom Coughlin doesn't make personnel decisions.
Okay, but I'm saying no, he does. I'm saying as a head coach, he has a say on who plays on the field and who doesn't. And I feel like he makes bad personnel decisions. He doesn't play the best players.
All right, that's fine, Jason. What's your next point?
An example I just wanted to give was Coughlin single-handedly cost us the playoffs in 2012, because if you go back to that season, we were 6-2, remember, in the first half. And then in the next game, at home against the Steelers, inexplicably, for no reason at all, he benches Sean Locklear at right tackle. He was playing really well. He was protecting Eli extremely well. He benched him explicitly in that game, put in David Deal. David Deal gave up the game-sealing sack to Lamar Woodley, if you remember. We lose that game, and that's where our collapse began. If you look at from the second half of 2012, and it all started because he, for no reason, he benched Sean Locklear. And the reason he gave was because you can't lose your job due to injury.
Jason, honestly, I don't remember that specific game or the circumstance around it, so I don't have a comment. Let's look forward here. You already called in. You talked about Coach last time you called in. Let's move on. What else do you want to talk about?
I just want to talk about just the overall the candidates. None of these candidates are really inspiring at all. The only person I would prefer over McAdoo is Josh McDaniels, because I think he's like this polar opposite of Coughlin because of his age and just his style. But if we can't get McDaniels, I would just stick with McAdoo, because this guy's a young Andy Reid. You got to give this guy a chance. You got to give him full control of the offense, 100% control. Let him run his offense. Let him play the players that he wants. And let him run the full-blown West Coast attack with Eli to round out his career. It's just the way to go. I don't know why. I don't see how any of these other candidates, like Hugh Jackson or Mike Smith, I don't see how they would be any upgrades over McAdoo. And that's all I wanted to say. I just hope we keep McAdoo as head coach, or McDaniels. But yeah.
All right, Jason. Appreciate the call, my friend. Hey, look, and I get it. You know, Eli had success in that type of system. But remember too, even if theoretically, McAdoo's not the head coach, you can get an offensive coordinator that runs a West Coast system. And it's not going to be identical, but it would still be a system similar enough where Eli Manning wouldn't have to make a significant change.
Yeah, and as I mentioned yesterday, Eli Manning's about as hardworking a quarterback as you're going to find in this game. He proved that he could change systems 2 years ago. Would you like him to? Not necessarily. Could he if he really had to? I'm sure he could. I mean, this is the kind of guy who leaves no stone unturned. I just want to mention, in reference to the Locklear comment that he made, I don't remember Sean Locklear being benched by the Giants. In fact, he played pretty well for them that season, and they were very happy with him, and he suffered a dramatic leg injury.
Yeah, I don't remember what game he did that
virtually ended his career. I mean, I believe he may have come back for a cup of coffee with somebody else, as a reserve, after rehabbing from a very serious leg injury. But Sean Locklear was a real godsend for the Giants. When they picked him up, as a veteran free agent, they didn't expect necessarily he'd be pushed into action. And then he wound up starting, I think, a dozen games for them that one season and played extremely well. So I would dispute the caller's comment about Sean Locklear.
Again, I would have to go back, and I don't have the game book here. I can probably pull it up and see who the starters were in that game real quickly, just to see who the actual starters were. Going into that game, taking a look at the Giants' schedule, in that game itself, Eli Manning was just 10 of 24 for 125 yards. The Steelers had two sacks in that game. The Giants rushed for about 130-something yards, it would look like. They got outgained overall. Where are the total offensive yards here? 349 to 182. So, I mean, it's hard for me to pin that on one offensive lineman. Again, if that was in fact the circumstance, I honestly don't remember. I'm going to try to look up.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is he was building his premise off of saying Coughlin's player deployment was poor, and he was using that as an example. Well, I don't think he can use that as an example. First of all, I think the facts he's basing it on are inaccurate.
Again, I don't remember, so I'm not going to say yes or no.
I'm not sure either, but I believe Locklear was injured, and that's why he wound up losing his spot. And, as far as his other premise with player deployment, I couldn't disagree more. I'm sorry. Tom Coughlin's going to Canton, and he's not going to be derailed by a foolish comment like that, that he did not deploy players properly.
All right, Deal did start a right tackle in that game. Let me see. I do not see Locklear on the list of players that came off the bench in that game. And normally, I don't even see Locklear listed here at all.
I'm telling you, he might have been hurt.
My recollection is that
he was injured, and that's why he came out of the lineup. They were very happy with him. Sean Locklear was playing very well.
Yeah, because they had basically, this is what they have listed here on when you have a play-by-play sheet, folks, on the front page they have who you started, and the Giants do have Deal starting a right tackle in that game against the Steelers. Again, I don't want to waste too much time on this, and they list the guys that came off the bench in that game, and usually the Giants would use big personnel. And they would have an additional tackle be a tight end in those types of games. Mm-hmm. And they do not have Locklear listed as that player who came in and played at all. He's not listed in the did not play column, which means that he wasn't active and didn't play.
Here it is.
And he's not on the inactive list.
Knee injury. Sean Locklear suffered a knee injury.
What year? What week?
In the game against the Redskins.
October what?
December. I got a story. December 5th, 2012. Giants lose Locklear for rest of season. Serious knee injury.
Well, they played the Steelers on November 4th. But I don't see Locklear listed on the roster here for this game in terms of coming into play in the game, starting. Oh, no, there he goes. No, Locklear, they did start with two tight ends. He's listed in the starting lineup. So he played in the game, but he did not start at right tackle. So that might have been a coach's decision. I don't remember. I honestly don't recall. But, again, the Giants gained 182 yards in that game, and it's hard for me to pin that on one offensive lineman. Anyway. Don't mean to get too off topic there. 201-939-4513. Alejandre is in New York. What's up, Alejandre?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to reiterate what the guy said on last caller about how Tom Coughlin made bad choices. He was still scouting Odell Beckham Jr. So how is that a bad choice? You know what I'm saying?
Well, remember, again, I've said this before, for good or bad, the coaches do have input in terms of who the players draft, but at the end, the final decision goes to the general manager.
Yeah, I think it was a caller yesterday saying they were going to regret the draft pick they lost last year for Landon Collins. I don't really see that happening. I've seen so much upside from him this year. He played excellent, in my opinion, except the drop interception.
Well, look, he made a lot of rookie mistakes, and he's got a lot to learn, but the point is the arrow's going up on him, and he should be a starter for the Giants for a lot of years to come.
Hey, look, and Landon Collins said it after the season when we talked to him, that he knows he has to work a lot on his coverage skills. He's pretty adept in the box. He's a pretty good tackler, but he has to work covering, especially down the middle of the field. You know, the Giants got killed on a lot of seam routes this year. That isn't a mystery or surprise to anybody. We've seen it all year long, and obviously the safeties play a big role in that.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you, Alejandre. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Brandon is in New Jersey. Brandon, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you, Brandon?
I'm going to play the GM for a second.
Go ahead, man. Put on the hat.
I want to hear out this whole scenario, man. I've been thinking about it. I think our Paul was on it. We got into it about the cow situation. You was there, too. But now I narrowed it down. Lovie Smith, Mike Smith, and Ben McAdoo. Those are three candidates I will probably consider. This is why. Now, we will stay in the 4-3 if we get Lovie Smith right. We need a middle linebacker that could cover and stop the run. And that is nobody going to be in there but in the draft. Excuse me. I think we will have to get a middle linebacker out of the draft. Then we need a free safety because Collins is the strong safety. We need a free safety, resign. Prince. We got Cromartie on the other side. We need a third and fourth corner. We could get that either free agency or draft. Then we need some more pass rush. It's not going to take a lot to fix the defense. All we need is the right guy. I think this team will respond more better to Lovie Smith's guidance. I think they would. But the whole thing is his record scares me. You know, the 2 years he had at, with the Buccaneers kind of scares me. Now, with the McAdoo situation, if he becomes the head coach, he has to give up the play calling. He will have to go get the guy from Green Bay, Tom Clemens. But I don't know who his defensive coordinator would be. That's probably what the Giants is probably worried about. They don't know who he would bring in as defense coordinator. Now, what y'all think? Now, with Mike Smith, I believe Mike Smith, he would keep McAdoo, but I don't know who his defensive coordinator would be neither. That would scare me. What y'all guys think?
Well, that's why you conduct interviews, because you ask these candidates what they're thinking and what they'd want to do.
Well,
and
absolutely.
They fill you in.
Yeah,
that's why they do these things.
Paul's exactly right. When they interview all these guys, they try to get an idea of who's going to be on their staff. Those are some of the questions that you ask that are really important when you decide who you're going to hire.
And so, here's what I would say. If you had the opportunity to talk to those three guys and you got those questions answered, you're in a better position then to make a decision. I have not heard Lovie Smith's name connected to anybody on interviews since he was released by the Buccaneers. Have you?
Nope. I haven't heard anything neither. That's why I don't know if he still want to coach or not. That's why I probably would. If he don't, I would probably move on to Mike Smith. Mike Smith would probably keep McAdoo on board. I don't know if McAdoo would want to work with him, but hopefully he would. But I just would wonder who Mike Smith's defensive coordinator would be.
Remember, Mike Smith's expertise is defense, too. So no matter who his defensive coordinator would be, he would have a very heavy hand in putting that defense together. And he did run a 4-3 in Atlanta, so the base would stay what it was the last couple of years for the Giants. Who his coordinator would be, I'd have to go back and look at his Atlanta staff and look at his who he worked with up in Jacksonville and Baltimore when he was there. But offhand, I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
One of the guys he worked with in Atlanta was Mike Nolan.
Right.
Who had been a long-time NFL veteran, assistant coach, and a head coach. In fact, he was defensive coordinator with the Giants under Dan
Reeves. But Mike Nolan is a 3-4 guy.
He had done some of that and done some of both, actually, to be honest with you. So
I believe this defense probably need to stay in the 4-3.
I agree with you.
Why I say that is because all we need is a middle linebacker that could cover and stop the run, in a free safety, in a third and fourth corner, and another pass rusher, too.
Brandon, you just listed six guys.
Based on what the Giants do have, though, in-house and under contract, they appear to have more capable defensive linemen than they do linebackers.
Thank you, Brandon. We appreciate the call.
So I would think the 4-3 makes more sense. But if you were going to blow it up and go to a 3-4, this is the year to do it.
Well, yes. How many defensive linemen do they actually have on the contract, though?
Quite a few. Kerry Wynn. Hankins.
Kerry Wynn could play.
Bromley.
Kerry Wynn could play 3-4 defensive end, by the way. He's equipped for that. Bromley, yes. Hankins, yes.
Yes.
I think that's pretty much it.
I think Nix, who didn't play much at all this
year.
Yeah,
but you're not gonna base what you do on defense around him. And Nix is actually a 3-4 nose tackle, if you want to get technical about it.
Well, it didn't work out so well in Kansas City.
It did not.
Let's see. JPP's a free agent.
Yep.
Ayers is a free agent.
Colin Jenkins
is a free agent.
Free agent.
Selby's
Ayers
a free agent.
Free agent. Yeah. There's not a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of people there, Paul.
Yeah.
And then a linebacker, you got JT Thomas under contract, Casillas under contract. That Brinkley was just on a one-year deal, so he's not. Beeson's still technically under contract. So maybe
it's not as many as I thought.
You can pretty much do whatever you want. I mean, honestly, you can pretty much do whatever you want. And I think that's a good thing. It gives you a lot of flexibility.
Well, that's true.
It doesn't lock you into anything. I think it's a good thing.
Jeez, you're right, though. The more I think about it, they don't have as many linemen under contract as I thought they did.
No, it's just those three guys, and they're all tackles.
See, part of the problem is, and we all get into this assumption
except
sometimes.
Except for Wynn. Wynn is also a defensive end.
Yeah. Sometimes we get into this assumption that, so-and-so is going to come back. And I keep thinking to myself, Robert Ayers had a great season, and I would hate to see him leave. I'm just thinking to myself, he's got to come back. But you know what? He's a free agent, so you don't know.
Other teams watch the same tape.
Yeah. I know.
They see the production, too. 201-939-4513. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas?
Dude, where you been? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Long time.
I wasn't sure what happened.
Yeah, man, this whole season, man, y'all know I go on a little hiatus sometimes.
That's okay.
Shakes is much more of an off-season caller than he is an in-season caller.
That's
absolutely true.
Yeah, Yeah.
So what do you got?
I can't take it with this mediocre, man. I can't take it.
What do you got for me, Shakes?
Well, I got a few things here. As far as coaching, I don't know if it's just me, if I just have high standards for this coach. But to me, I kind of feel like you don't give him the key, the new next head coach, you don't give him the keys to the kingdom. But you give him the keys to the passenger side. You know, he going to have some say in some things. So
sure.
This guy has to be the right guy. You can't just bring in any old body. So me, of course, everybody's saying, well, my options is out of the realm. Like, there's no possibility. But my number one guy is Bill Cowher. But
Bill Cowher said he doesn't want to coach anymore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it don't look like that's going to happen. So my next guy is Nick Saban, though. I really want Nick Saban. If you want to have something like how Seattle have, or the rest of these guys like Harbaugh had in San Francisco, like, these guys, they know the college evaluation. So they know these kids, and they can have one up on
Shakes,
a lot of other
if I may interrupt for just a second, I think you got to cross him off the list because of the power structure of the way the Giants do things, the separation of power between the GM and the head coach. Nick Saban is in a situation where he certainly has the right and the ability to demand everything. With the college resume he's put out there, with the experience he's put out there, with the kind of money he makes, with the kind of security that he has, if he were to go to any NFL team and accept an interview with them, okay, he's got the right to walk into that door and say, fellas, you sit down and listen to me because I'm going to tell you what it is that my world needs to have.
And, Shakes, also keep in mind, I'm not sure if you heard it, we had Mike Garafolo on earlier in the show, and he said there has been no indication as of yet, and who knows, you know, what can change in the future, but no indication from him, from his sources, that there's any interest there. But who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. Paul, you say that, right? And let me ask you this question, though. Seeing how Coughlin had a lot of say in the organization – and a lot of things going on in the personnel department. You don't think that Nick Saban would look at that and say, oh, I can work with Reese just like Coughlin did?
I think Nick Saban, because of all of the factors I just said about a minute or so ago, he's in a position to control his own world. I don't think he's much of a peace of mind to go anywhere where he's going to have to share that or listen to anybody else. Remember, he did try the NFL deal with the Dolphins. He dipped his foot in the water, and that did not work out so well. And now he goes back into college, and what happens? He becomes the king of the NCAA football world.
And he is, by the way, the king of the NCAA
football world.
He really is.
He's the man. I mean, Shakes, I'm not talking about the Giants even. Honestly, why would he leave that situation for any NFL team right now? Why would he?
It's hard to say. But sometimes these coaches have that itch that, you know, okay, I'm dominating on this level. Can I do it on the next level?
Yeah, but he's right. he's in position, Shakes, to become maybe the greatest college football coach in history. He's starting to get in that conversation now. Why would he turn that away to go back to the NFL where he failed once and probably would fail again? Honestly.
I don't know.
Look, maybe you want him, and that's fine, but I don't think he wants it.
Okay, Shakes, how about this? I got a question for you, Shakes. Of the guys that we know that the Giants have talked to, of that group, and I know I'm limited in here. I know you don't like to be limited, but that's what I'm doing. Who do you like of the names that have been out there?
None.
I knew that was the answer I was going to get. That's why I asked the question.
Okay. So you just want guys who the Giants are not talking to or can't get. Is that the problem?
No, I guess I just got high standards, man. But look, I like McDermott.
Look,
we gotta wait, right?
You want? We'll dial up Bill Parcells right now for you. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I would love Parcells. I would love Belichick. How about Belichick?
Well, I don't think he's taking a phone call, and I don't think he can make that phone call either. He's under contract.
Probably not.
All right, but can I say something, and then I want to ask a question. I'll
sure.
Get over here.
Go ahead.
Y'all all know I love my linebackers. I made an article, Linebackers Matter, and, you know, I've been screaming about linebackers for years and years since
yes,
I've been calling BBK. Now, they have a lot to do with being a great defense in my eyes, the front seven particularly. But in this free agency and in this draft, there's a lot of linebackers to be had. You can't poop on them, man. You can't poop on the linebackers. Go grab a couple of them, please. And my last question for y'all, and I'll take it off the air. Looking at the free agency crop and defensive end, the uncertainty of defensive ends coming out in the draft because of, you know, the whole 3-4 thing, do y'all say we need to give JPP another shot and just see how his surgery goes and just try to go on with JPP and, you know, his 3.5 fingers? Thanks for taking my call, man.
Thanks, Shakes. You know what? I think Jason Pierre-Paul's a very interesting decision this offseason. I really do. I've thought about it a lot. I think there's going to be a lot of interest around the league, you know, despite the limitations with the hand. As Mike Garofolo pointed out, Paul, when we talked to him, 4-3 pass-rushing defensive ends who also, by the way, are pretty good against the run, they do not grow on trees.
No, they don't.
They are as rare can be. It's almost like finding a good starting quarterback or real, you know, ace Darrell Revis type of number one cornerback. These guys do not come around very often. So even guys that are limited and, you know, have issues, and we know about Jason Pierre-Paul's trouble tackling and wrapping up, you know, I hesitate to put a lot of stock into this surgery solving a lot of problems. You know, this is the same guy we heard about in September was saying, I can come and play right now. So I'll believe that when I see it, and I think other teams will probably look at it the same way. The question is he going to wait to maybe after he has these type of surgeries so teams can see his improved condition so he can maybe try to get a little bit more money? I think this is going to be an interesting scenario that I don't think will work itself out quickly. I think there's going to be a big testing of the market here by him, and we're going to see how this whole thing plays out.
Although he has preached loyalty to the Giants for giving him a second chance and coming
rightfully
back
so.
Here,
absolutely.
You know, while I finish this answer, I know this answer, what I'm going to ask you. I want you to look up Robert Ayers' stats game by game. Please do that for me.
Oh, they got a lot better after JPP got back. Absolutely.
Then you don't even need to look it up.
I believe he had 6 sacks in his last 7 games.
Because that is part of this equation for me when I calculate what JPP brings to the table. There is no question. As you watch the game tape, after JPP was inserted into the Giants lineup, there was absolutely no doubt that he had an impact on the rest of that defensive line, and specifically Robert Ayers. There is no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
It's on tape.
No question.
It's on tape.
I'm not arguing
okay.
with that. And that's why I'm saying, even though he only had 1 sack, there's a lot of value there.
There's value in JPP had pressures. He had quarterback hits. Yes, he had some missed tackles. Yes, he didn't get as many sacks as he would have liked. No doubt about that.
But just the attention, Paul. It gives everybody else one-on-one matchups.
I'm telling you, you have to see when the Giants played Robert Ayers as a defensive tackle, when they went to their pass rush package, and he was lining up next to JPP, you could see it. It was so obvious that whoever was lined up opposite Jason was so much worried about Jason that maybe they didn't help out chipping on Ayers. Or maybe the guy who was lined up on Ayers was thinking, I might have to help chip out on JPP. In either case, Robert Ayers had a more isolated man-to-man situation that he had to win, and in a lot of cases, he won it. And that's a good thing. So I think JPP provides a little more value than just his stat line. I'd like to see him back, but the problem then becomes, as we discussed many times over, the business aspect of it and where does his financial number lie, because he's not the all-pro JPP that was going to Hawaii with 17 sacks. That guy probably does not exist anymore, my opinion.
201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. You can play DraftKings Fantasy Sports in the playoffs. It's DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Jeff, New Hampshire, you're up next, Jeff.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Doing well, Jeff. How are you, pal?
Good. I just wanted to kind of refute a couple of statements I've heard from some callers, one today, one yesterday, that have been kind of bugging me.
Sure, go ahead.
The guy earlier with his comment about Coughlin, we're not even going to talk about how kind of silly it was about his use of players.
Yeah.
The fact that he thinks he wouldn't be successful in Philadelphia is, I mean, I can laugh at that because I'm terrified of Coughlin going to Philadelphia. For one, because it would look awful seeing him in the green when he was in blue for so many years. But I wasn't afraid of Philadelphia this year because of Chip Kelly and the way he put players in bad situations. I don't think he used his skill set that he had. Tom Coughlin loves a downhill running back, and he would absolutely have a field day with DeMarco Murray.
That he would.
He would get in there. He would get in there and put them in the system, and he would get something out of. He would have Murray running downhill. He'd have Sproles for a third down back. He'll have Bradford in a pro style offense where he has a chance to be successful.
If he's there,
he'll get a hell of a lot more. Yeah, obviously, if he's there, but he'll get a hell of a lot more out of those players than Chip Kelly did. And I'd actually be worried about Philadelphia next year if they still had Chip Kelly. I'm not even worried about him a little bit. So. To say that he wouldn't be successful in Philadelphia, I think he would be extremely successful pretty quickly with the talent that they have.
If I may interrupt for a second, I think there are a lot of good football people who would be much more successful than Chip Kelly in Philadelphia because he was a mad scientist who relied too much on schemes and a bunch of garbage. And that's why I never really thought much of him coming to the
NFL. By the way, for all these Giant fans that are killing Chip Kelly, you guys realize he was 5-1 against the Giants in his career, right?
That's just saying.
You should be kind of happy he's gone because he's won 5 out of 6 games against the Giants.
I'm not characterizing my feelings over him being there or not, other than I'm saying how many playoff games did he win as an NFL head coach?
Well, he was only there for 3 seasons.
And
he stripped the roster of talent and took a winning team into a losing team.
Hey, look, Chip is a personnel guy and is a coach to me are two separate issues.
Agree.
What else you got, Jeff?
The one, I believe it was Len yesterday, was making such a big deal about us giving up a fourth-round pick to move up and take Landon Collins, second-guessing that move. Before the draft, Landon Collins was like a consensus top 20 to top 25 player in most people's mock drafts.
He was usually in the 20s somewhere, about the week before the draft.
He was
anywhere between like 22 and 29 is generally where I saw him.
Sure.
Right. He started to drop a little bit.
Correct.
But, I remember reading a mock draft, and this one was a stretch. I didn't put any thought into it. But some guy on CBS thought the Giants would take Collins at number 9 because our need for safety was so bad.
Well, that's crazy.
Obviously, that was a stretch. But point is, he was a first-round caliber player. And the fact that he fell to the second round, and we move up to get him when safety was a huge need for us, to give up a fourth-round pick is that big a deal to go up and get a first-round talented player? I don't understand the logic in that or being upset about that in the least. Look at the players that you're getting in the fourth round and compare them to Landon Collins. Even if Collins didn't have as solid a rookie season as he had, the fact that he's a first-round caliber player still sitting there and all you're giving up is a fourth-round pick for him, and one of the other comments he kept saying, you don't trade a pick to get a strong safety. I really hate that school of thought when it comes to a draft that you don't take this position here, you don't take that position there. You never draft a guard in the top 10. You don't take a player of this position. You take the best player available. Like, I mean, how do you not go for an all-pro strong safety or an all-pro guard or a Hall of Fame guard because he's too high and you think you should take a wide receiver who's going to flame out?
Well, Jeff, here's the key, though.
The top 10 who's, I
here's the key. Here's the
take
key,
this
though.
Position there.
I agree. I don't care about the position, but let's see if he becomes a Pro Bowl caliber strong safety. I think that's when we have this conversation. We decide whether or not it was a good move. We have to see the type of player Landon Collins develops into. Once we see that, we'll be able to judge whether or not it was a wise move to trade up. I can tell you from draft night, Paul and I were on live on Giants.com when it happened.
I remember.
And when we heard about the trade, I know I assumed this. I thought the Giants would have to give up a 3 to move up 10 or 11 spots in the second round. I honestly did. When I heard it was just a 4, I was like, oh, you know what? That's not that ridiculous of a price to have to give up to move up to the top of the first round. So at the time, I thought the price was pretty good for the amount of spots the Giants had to move.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even if Collins doesn't turn out to be great, but you never know, an injury, this, that, the other thing, whatever.
Right.
But on paper, like that's the 33rd player picked in the draft. Only give up a fourth-round pick to move up that high. Even if it doesn't work, you know, anytime something doesn't work out, you're an idiot for it. And if it works out, you're a genius. But just on paper, what you're giving up to move up to get a first-round talent in the second round, I just don't understand.
Let me put it to you this way. I don't know how old you are, and I know he's a strong safety as opposed to a free, but if Landon Collins turns out to be as good as Terry Kinnard was here for a number of years as a starter, I think you'd be pretty happy.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. We got to run.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. AJ, South Carolina. AJ, you're the last caller. Go ahead. You got 30 seconds.
I don't think McAdoo ain't ready to be the head coach yet. I'd like to see him get more season as offensive coordinator.
Hey, you know, AJ, and I think to a certain extent, that's understandable. And I think Mike Garafolo said it earlier in the show that, you know, if head coaching experience wasn't important, that would have been a slam dunk type of hire. And I think that thinking does make a certain amount of sense. He's here. He has success with Eli. Obviously, the Giants are very impressed with his personality, how he goes about his business. John Mara said as much at the press conference after the season. And look, I think trying to figure out how anybody on this planet will handle being a head coach in the NFL is really, really difficult. It's like what they say about all these people running for president. You don't know what type of president someone's going to be until you sit him in the Oval Office. You don't know what type of head coach someone's going to be until you put the headset in there on their head, put the clipboard in their hands, and make them make decisions in the heat of battle. It's not easy. And to figure out how a guy that's never done that before is going to do is difficult. For guys that have done it before, you have a much better idea of how they're going to handle those type of situations.
I would only add that Ben McAdoo's been an offensive coordinator in this league for 2 years.
Right.
It's not as though he's done it in three spots, 4 years apiece. He's had a decade of being at the second level. He's done that for just 2 years. So if someone wants to express concern about that lack of experience, I think they're justified.
And quite frankly, guys, and again, I love Ben McAdoo. I think he's a great coach. He's a great guy. Big fan. But he's only 38 years old. I mean, how often does a guy become a head coach under the age of 40? I mean, you can count on two hands probably the amount of times that's happened in the history of pro football, right?
Boy, you're making me feel old. I know I am old. Thank you.
Well, I said coach is 30 years old, not coaches that were coaching in 1938.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much, Paul. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. I got the jab in before I close. That's... Come on, can't beat that. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoke. Tomorrow, it's Anita Marks and Lance Meadow at noon. Tune in. They'll have more on the Giants coaching search. Thanks for joining us. For Paul, I'm John. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!